This is Mind Salad, a program of diverse weekly discussions about mental wellness with a rotating panel of licensed professional mental health counselors on a variety of mental health topics with guests and information to help you sort through life struggles. The information that is provided on this program is for informational purposes only and is not meant to treat or diagnose any mental health condition or be a substitute for therapy. This week, your host is Kyle Bridgman from Project Ember Counseling.
Good morning and welcome to Mind Salad, a diverse discussion about mental wellness. My name is Kyle Bridgman and I'll be your host today. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and the founder and owner of Project Ember Counseling here in Colorado Springs. We have about 7 clinicians in our group practice and we work with children as young as a couple years old, all the way up to older adults. And our therapists specialize in areas such as play therapy, working with adolescents and teens and all the issues that they're dealing with, couples and families, trauma work, and EMDR therapy. If you'd like to learn more about Project Ember Counseling and the services we provide, feel free to check out the website at project-ember.com. You can check out our Facebook page, or you can always give me a call at 719-246-5693. 719-246-5693. For those of you who were able to tune in last month when I was hosting the show, I had all 3 of my children on, and we talked about, or I kind of interviewed them about what it's like to be the child of somebody who works in the healthcare or behavioral health care field. And just to kind of follow up with that, I really took to heart a lot of the things they told me. I will let you know that it was difficult hearing some of those things. I wasn't surprised by anything, but really wanted to make it an environment where they could be open and honest with me. But I took a lot of their feedback to heart. And I think over the past month, it's impacted me. I at the end of the show, I talked about how being good at one, I hope impacts being good at the other. And so being good as a parent, a father, a husband, I hope that impacts the way that I do therapy, but also the way that I do therapy. I hope that there's an influence from the clients that I work with and the feedback and the things that I hear from them. And I hope that makes me a better father and husband and parent in general. And so just listening to my kids, I've really taken it to heart and tried to be intentional this month. Couple of things they said were just learning to be more patient. Being a therapist can be very stressful sometimes. So being able to shut that off when you go home. And my oldest son, I think, had mentioned something about that is when we're working on projects and we're doing things, is that he notices my stress level, that I can get angry from time to time. And so while that was hard to hear, trying to be more intentional when I go home is just kind of shut off all the stressors of work and just be there and present and mindful with my kids and with my wife. And so if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, you can always check it out on podbean.com. You can check out that episode along with the other therapists and our weekly radio shows. So to jump into today's topic, there's a lot of different things that people come into counseling for. Some of the common ones are anxiety and depression. We deal with a lot of trauma and PTSD and other severe cases. As I spent time as a therapist, one of the things that we do at the early on with clients is go over what's called a treatment plan, which is really just a fancy way of saying it's the goals that they want to accomplish. It's the objectives. It's why they're coming in to see you, the things they want to work on. And one of the common themes that comes up is people that are struggling with their sense of self-esteem, their sense of self-worth, and really just questioning their overall sense of value. When we talk about a personal sense of value, people will often say things like, I have low self-esteem, I have low self-worth. And a lot of times they will use these interchangeably in therapy, but not really having a strong sense of personal value. And so depending on who you talk to, you can read tons of articles out there, you can watch videos on YouTube. The topic of self-esteem and self-worth, you're gonna get a lot of different takes on it. So today I'm just gonna speak on kind of how I make sense of things, not just really my perspective, but I have to take all of this information as a therapist and how can I get it across to people? How can we have a conversation with clients that makes sense to them? And so this is just kind of how I make sense of the difference between self-esteem and self-worth and really that overall sense of value. So I'm not saying my perspective is necessarily right, that someone else is wrong. I'm simply framing it in a way that seems to help myself and many of my clients understand the concept. So today I want to talk about these concepts and how they impact all of us in similar yet very different ways. In preparing for today's show, like in every other show, I ask myself, what is the purpose? What is my intended goal? What is the outcome? What do, by the end of my time with you, what is it that I want to say or what do I want to get across? What I'm hoping is that for those of you listening, those of you that are struggling with their sense of value, that maybe I can provide some kind of insight, maybe a new way of looking at things, maybe a new way of understanding who you are, and really helping you feel better about who you are and what you can do to feel better about who you are. And I also want to say before we jump in that personally, I don't look at self-worth and self-esteem in terms of positive or negative. I don't view them as good or bad, but I generally frame it as, is it healthy or is it unhealthy? Do you have a healthy sense of self-worth or an unhealthy sense? Do you have a healthy sense of who you are as a person or an unhealthy view? And it might seem like just semantics, but I truly believe that words matter and the things that we say influence our overall perspectives and how we view ourselves and others around us. So jumping in, first thing I want to do is just define what is self-worth, what is self-esteem. And so if you look up just the word worth in the dictionary, what you'll find is says something like it's good or important enough to justify. It's having a tangible or quantitative value. So if you go to the shoe store and you find a pair that you really like, there's a monetary value placed on that item. And then you decide, am I willing to pay? And there's an exchange of money and a tangible means of determining value based on what you're willing to pay. Now, let's look at how that applies to self-worth. If you have a certain skill set, say you're an engineer or a mechanic, and you went to some form of school to learn this trade, and when you apply for a job, the company says that your knowledge and education is worth X amount of dollars per hour or X amount per year. And in a similar way, what you know and what you do determine your worth to yourself and to society. So as you're listening to this, you may already be cringing a little bit how I'm defining the word worth. And as it applies to you, just hang in with me. So a little bit more about self-worth before we jump into self-esteem. In therapy, there is what's called the self-worth theory, which basically states that one of our main priorities in life next to survival is our need for acceptance. And if we look at society and what culture says makes a person acceptable within a certain cultural group, social group, we think of words like appearance, something that's measurable based on beauty, based on the size of clothes we wear. We think of net worth, something that we can measure based on our income, based on the size of house and how expensive where we live in the community. We also base our worth on who we know, what social circles we run in, what's our status in the community. We also look at our achievements. We look at how many degrees we have. We look at the title we have in a company. And these are all things that we can measure. And then based on this, this is how we determine our value. What I want you to remember here is that I'm not saying that I agree with these necessarily, but that these are the standards that we judge our success, our personal value on. Whether or not we like it, our society and our culture has used these measurements to define our value within it. And I'm not saying that I necessarily agree with them. I'm not saying that I agree with these as being the correct standards that we judge success or personal value by. What I'm doing is simply laying the groundwork for understanding how it impacts us. So what I want to do now is move on to self-esteem and defining what that really is. So if we get rid of the word self and self-esteem and just look at what is the dictionary's definition of esteem. It means to regard highly or favorably, regard with respect or admiration. Now, let's add the word self back in there. What does self-esteem mean? Self-esteem is defined as a realistic respect or a favorable impression for oneself, really just self-respect. And so based on these definitions and how I think of esteem, it's more of a felt sense than a tangible quality that you possess. And it's not based on what we have to offer. It's not based on our rank in society, but it's based on how we feel about ourselves. So I want you to think, who is someone that you esteem, someone that you respect, someone that you admire? And as you think of that person, I want you to try to think about them outside of their job title, their financial status, or what they do for you from a worth sense, but how they make you feel. As you're thinking about it, maybe a parent comes to mind, or a teacher, or maybe it's a coach or a boss, or maybe it's a friend who you just met or somebody you've known for years. What is it about that person and how they interact with you and how they treat you that makes you feel valued in that relationship? I've got a buddy, I've known him for about 14 years now, and we met through work, but we actually never worked directly together for quite a while. And as I think about our relationship and just kind of how it's grown over the past few years, it started based on some mutual interests. We just got together, we were having a drink and just talking. It wasn't based on anything he could do for me, anything that he offered. It was just based on an understanding and a mutual respect that we had for each other. And that's not to say that he doesn't have plenty of skills. It's not to say that he hasn't helped me move from time to time or do some projects around the house. But that relationship has survived because of who he is to me and how much I value him as a person, not by what he has to offer me. Now what I want you to do is think of that same type of respect or favorable impression as it relates to yourself. Do you have a sense of self-respect? Is there a sense of fondness or admiration for who you are? Aside from what you have to offer the others, do you like you? If so, what are some of the characteristics or quality you possess that you like the most about yourself? The traits that make you feel good about yourself? And if not, what do you think is causing that? What are you lacking or what is getting in the way? If you're just joining us, my name is Kyle Bridgman with Project Ember Counseling, and today we are talking about the concepts of self-esteem and self-worth and the relationship between the two and how they impact our overall sense of value. So we were talking about the different characteristics and qualities that make you feel good about yourself. Maybe you don't feel good about yourself and what's impacting them. And I want to make sure that I say real quick, as I'm talking about all this, I'm speaking about in an overarching sense. I understand that each person is unique and their story and their situation are different from the next, but I'm simply talking about the basic generalizations or common factors that I've seen as a therapist and working with a lot of adolescents and teens, just some of the common factors that I've seen in them. So now that we've defined the two, let's take a look at the past and how that impacts the present. How your sense of personal value form, where does it come from, and how is it stunted? So in therapy, one of the things we often look at are your early attachment figures. And you may be wondering, what is an attachment figure? It could be a parent, it could be a grandparent, it could be a friend, it could be a guardian. It's just somebody that is responsible early on in life for helping to raise you. These are the individuals that have the greatest impact on forming the foundations of who we will become, and as they're really our first relationships growing up. So for the sake of this show, I'm going to focus more on the deficits and how those impact our overall sense of value as it pertains to self-esteem and self-worth. And I don't want to sound like a complete downer or overly fatalistic by any means, but once we understand how the negative sense of self is formed, that can give us an idea and room to improve in these areas. So let's say you grew up in a home where your early attachment figures pushed you really hard in sports, maybe in education, or to be a model individual. But while you were doing this, whether it was with what they said or how they treated you, they made it clear that you would never be good enough. You had all A's on your report card except for that one class where you got a B+, and their entire focus was on how you could have done better. What message does that send to you in aspects of your personal value, and how does that influence you? What I see in that scenario is that the message being sent is that your worth is the most important thing based on your success, but your esteem is being neglected. And this is a conflicting message because despite doing really well, in someone's eyes, possibly even in your own, you aren't good enough and you never will be. And it's not just about the messages we're being told, but as unique individuals, we all process information differently. I remember a couple weeks ago, I was working with a client and he told me that growing up, his parents would constantly tell him that he was smart and they were trying to be supportive. They're trying to be encouraging. But as time went on and as he progressed from elementary school into high school, things began to get tougher. And what used to come easy to him in school now became more difficult despite all of his good grades. Anything less than perfection in his mind made him a failure. In his mind, he said, if I'm smart, based on what my parents told me, then why do I feel so dumb sometimes? And this is the narrative constantly running through his mind. His parents weren't blatantly trying to negatively impact his self-esteem, but when the foundation of his worth was shaken by not getting good grades, it began impacting how he felt about himself. Or what about the person who was constantly praised as a child, given participation trophies, even when they lost, and told they were awesome just for trying? And what if that person were never truly challenged or taught important life skills? They were never given a tangible skill set to prepare them for life as an adult, where hardship and failure is a natural part of life. Have you ever seen one of those shows like American Idol, America's Got Talent? And especially during the audition phases, week 1 and 2, someone comes on stage and they think they're amazing and that they have the greatest voice of all time. And there's a couple judges on there who sugarcoat things and make them feel good about themselves because they probably don't like conflict. They don't like making people feel bad. But then they're face to face with Simon Cowell. Possibly for the first time in their life, they're confronted with honest feedback and they're crushed. Well, they're either crushed or completely dismiss the constructive criticism they're being given. So why is this? So based on what we've been talking about and how we've defined self-esteem versus self-worth, they have an inflated or unhealthy sense of self-esteem. They feel really good about themselves, but they don't have the skill or talent, the tangible worth to back it up. And these are just two examples to demonstrate the interplay between self-esteem and self-worth. There are plenty of other variables and other factors. And if we had more time, we could go over some of them. But I highlighted these two because these are the most common I see in practice. So before we go over ways to fill in some of the gaps in one or the other and how to work on some of those deficits, let's look at some of the negative aspects of basing your value solely on one or the other. Let's say you go to work and you're talking with somebody, you're having a great day so far, but they say something that just doesn't sit right with you, or you take it very personal. And all of a sudden, the rest of your day is impacted by what they've said. So if your esteem, if your confidence, if your how you feel about yourself is based on what other people say, I call this the chameleon effect. It's that who we are as a person is based or determined on how other people view us. If you have a low sense of self-esteem, then you're constantly looking to other people to validate you. But what if they don't? If you have a good sense of self-esteem, a healthy sense of self-esteem, then it doesn't matter what other people tell you. But again, this depends on who you are as a person and your level of self-esteem. So if you're surrounded by positive people, encouraging people, you feel good. But if you're surrounded by people who are rude or mean or toxic, then all of a sudden that impacts how you see yourself. If your entire sense of value is based on self-worth, our worth tends to be a little bit more stable in the sense that once we have certain experiences, once we learn certain skills, once we show competence in a certain area, it doesn't change our feelings or emotions, and that doesn't go away. But having said that, there are things in life that can completely rock your world and have a tremendous impact on our sense of worth. Let's say you're driving to work and you get in a car accident that leaves you completely paralyzed from the neck down. Your brain is still intact. Your mind is still functioning. You can still think. The knowledge is still there, but your ability to do has gone away. And let's say before the accident, you worked in construction. Maybe you were a nurse, did something with your hands, and the career you loved and the career that you were really good at and the thing that provided you with a sense of value has now been completely stripped away from you. How does that impact how you feel about who you are? I had an uncle a while back who passed from Lou Gehrig's disease, which is also referred to as ALS. And I remember the person before the disease, and he was a goofy, laid back, brilliant engineer who possessed such a great personality and a great mind. I remember going to see him when things had gotten pretty bad, and he was now resigned to living in a wheelchair most of the day. His wife had become his full-time caregiver. She had to help him eat. She had to help him shower. She had to help him use the restroom and do basic functions that we often take for granted. I also remember connected to his wheelchair was a monitor. And on the monitor, there were letters. There was preset words. And this is how he communicated. And so he could use his eyes as a cursor and he could still have a conversation back and forth. And with everything that gave him a sense of purpose was taken away, his physical abilities, he never lost his sense of humor. He never lost his ability to connect with you as a person, even if it was a robotic voice coming from some speaker on his wheelchair. As I was thinking about preparing for the show, and I was thinking about him, his worth, everything that he had to provide society, everything he had to provide his family was taken away. There wasn't anything that he could do, but did it change his overall sense of value? And as I was thinking about, absolutely not. Like he's still the same person. He was a caring, loving individual. He had that sense of humor. There was still a connection. And so just because he couldn't do didn't make him any less of a person. So what is the relationship between these two? When I think of them, I kind of think of a seesaw. And on one end, we've got self-esteem. On the other, we've got self-worth. And if you've ever enjoyed this toy as a child, you know that with real people, if you have one smaller person on one side and a bigger person on the other, it doesn't tend to work very well. It's out of balance. The weight difference doesn't make it near as fun. One person's got to try harder. They've got to jump to get the other person to go down. And the other person is kind of just floating there at the top, waiting for the other person to do the work. It doesn't mean that it won't work. It just means that it takes more effort. For most people, there isn't going to be a complete sense of balance, but we can learn to build on one or the other. And the stronger one gets, the more capable we feel in the other. All right, so with what little time we have left, what I want to do is give you some ideas. How can you build on these? We've talked a lot about what they are, but now that you have the information, what do you do with it? And so let's start with how do we build self-worth? What I tell a lot of my clients is you need to challenge yourself. You need to learn. You need to try new things. You need to form new relationships with people who are different from you. You need to educate yourself. You need to learn skills. And even if they aren't your strengths, give them a try. I've worked with quite a few adult clients who come in and they don't know how to throw a football. Some don't know how to ride a bike or swim. When they're in conversation with friends or coworkers, they don't feel like they have anything to add or that they know anything about the specific topic, and their confidence is low. This is impacting their self-esteem. And what I would say is that as you accomplish certain tasks, as you challenge yourself, as you begin to feel more competent, as you learn to be more mindful of how this makes you feel, notice that your esteem grows, how you feel about yourself increases. And remember that these two are interconnected. A change in one will impact a change in the other. So if I could sum up with self-worth, try new things, challenge yourself, grow. How do you impact self-esteem? How do you change the way that you feel about yourself? What I'd say with this, there's no magic bullet. I can't tell you to just start feeling better about yourself. Just have more confidence. It's not going to work. What I would say is take time to get to know yourself and focus on the positives. So many people come in, and if I ask them, give me 2 to 3 things you like about yourself, they have no idea. But if I say, what don't you like about yourself? They can easily rattle off a list of 10 to 12 things. Why is it so difficult for them to find or to express what they like about themselves? So what I would say is take time to get to know yourself and focus on those positives. Self-awareness is a key in self-esteem. Be honest with yourself about the things you don't like, but focus your attention on what you do and what you can do to improve it. As a kid, I remember having a horrible haircut. It looked like Alfalfa from The Little Rascals. And so I would get about half a can of hairspray, I would comb that thing over and just try to completely mat it down. I also remember we didn't have a lot of money at the time, so I had to wear secondhand clothes, things from thrift stores, things that were handed down from other siblings or other family members. But I remember vowing to myself in high school, in college, that I was going to go to an actual barber. As much as I love my mom, cutting my hair on our back porch was probably not the best. But I was going to buy clothes that I wanted. I was going to look the way that I wanted. And what I noticed as I started doing this is that my confidence began to grow. At school, I was normally reserved because I didn't feel good about myself. And so I didn't talk to people. I kind of sat off by myself, didn't make new friends. But as my look changed, confidence began to grow. And I'm not saying looks are the most important thing. What I'm saying is that with this internal change about how I felt about myself, the external began to change. I was willing to try new things, meet new people, put myself in situations that I would have never done before because I didn't possess the confidence to do so. So in closing, let me ask you this. When you look in the mirror, what do you see? I'm not talking about what you see on the outside, but on the inside. I was talking to a client this week, and she was mentioning that every time she looks in the mirror, she's disgusted. She almost doesn't want to look in the mirror. And it's not because of she hasn't done her hair for the day, she hasn't put on her makeup, because when she looks into her eyes, what does she see on the inside? It's depression, it's despair, it's sadness. And that's not the person who she used to be. And so as we were talking and encouraging her, what can we do to change this? What's one little thing you can do this week? And it's nothing complicated. It's nothing difficult. Wake up every morning. Go for a walk. Take a shower. Eat breakfast. And just notice, as you begin to feel better about yourself, how does that change your motivation? How does that change what you want to do throughout the day? How does that impact your sense of confidence, your desire to go get a job, your desire to learn? Whatever it might be. So if I could give you any takeaway for this week, if you look in the mirror and you don't like what you see and you feel like it's something you can't do alone, reach out. I don't care if it's me. I don't care if it's Project Denver Counseling. I don't care if it's another therapist in the area, but just reach out. Find somebody who can walk with you along the way. Just because it is what it is doesn't mean it is what it should be. So if you need help, find somebody. I'm Kyle Bridgman with Project Denver Counseling, and thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Mind Salad, a discussion of mental wellness issues and topics with a rotating panel of mental health providers. Heard every Sunday at 11:30 a.m. on KPPF, and be sure to listen to the podcast on Podbean.